Ryan, if you would come on up and share some wisdom with us about how you came to believe. All the speakers are way at the back, so get used to this.
Hello, I am Ryan. I'm vertically challenged. Oh. Okay, that's another meeting. So, yes, as Marty had said, he asked me last night, and I thought, you know what? I saw that email the other day, and I thought, I really should just, maybe I should, you know what? Everyone's probably filled up the slots. Excuse. And then he comes up last night and asked me, and I thought, I guess this is what I'm supposed to do. So here I am. Can you guys hear me all right back there? That's good. Okay. Okay, so a little bit about me. I was raised in Vancouver Island, BC, by an alcoholic mother. I was the youngest of four. Mom was a 4'10" little pit bull, as I like to say. So you now see where I get the height from. She was a registered nurse, and in her position, she had a lot of love to give to these patients. And on numerous occasions, I remember seeing bouquets brought to the house or delivered to the house because she was able to cry with the patients and console them and love them and their family and be a part of them. And that was good to have, Mr. Hyde. She was at one point the very loving hand of a mother and the backhand of the mother also at times. So she would usually come home after work, working a late night of work, and she would come home to a few beers and relax and settle her down from the hard night of work of, you know, crazy hospital mode. And she'd go to bed and wake up for work the next day, but she woke up a bit angry usually. And that house better had been cleaned, because if she came out and it was dirty, you got a cuff. So, such is life. I went through high school. And if you can imagine being 5 foot nothing and also having Tourette's, it was very fun. It was very fun. If being short doesn't stand out enough, try going all the time. It's quite noticeable. So, yeah. I used to find being who I was such a negative. I'm short and I got Tourette's and I've got this and I got that, and why me, why me, why me, you know? I gladly say today that all of that has turned around and I've found strength from every single one of those experiences. Yeah. Also in high school, life was going so great, and I had a beautiful girlfriend, and she was very good. She was very good at flirting with others, partying, eventually cheating on me. But you know what? I could have fixed her. I hung in there. Yeah. Well, there was one great thing about my teen years, and that was by the age of 13, I started doing karate. And I loved karate. It was my passion. I was there 3 hours a day, 4 days a week, to eventually, 4 years later, I started teaching the dojo. Karate was everything to me. It consumed my life. It was such a strength-building asset to me. I eventually took over the dojo, started teaching karate to about 40-so students. And at that time, I'd worked a deal with my sensei that he would take the fee money for teaching the students, and he would take a little off the top and pay the bills, and I would get whatever's left over. Well, I didn't get much, and he got all. The rent didn't get paid. And eventually, that pretty much tore that love right out of my heart. And that another thing that teaching me that principles before people, that nobody is perfect. So after that, I ended up leaving the hometown in BC on Vancouver Island. Because as my life was going, it was getting pretty bad. And my hometown was riddled with drugs and alcohol and partying because there was nothing to do other than walk in the rain. That's all it does out there is rain. Every day, every night, it rains. So I actually think I got extra webbing in my fingers, actually, because it rains so much out there. Yeah. So after I graduated, I left that town with such enthusiasm, esteem, and such things as being an angry, small little person. You know, as being a vertically challenged person, you get kind of pushed down by a lot of bigger people, and they, bosses, colleagues, coworkers, teachers. I've had from so many people you wouldn't expect to treat you in such a way. It just mentally happens. They just kind of, what are you gonna do? And push you away. I moved in here with my brothers and my dad, and I do like to work with the family business. And I always say that my mother got me to Al-Anon, but my dad got me to CODA. Now, the family business is this. We had a family business, and that business was 180 rental units we worked together. And we had a dysfunctional family. So you can all understand how perfectly unison that went together with a full life of craziness. So through the I endured the mental abuse of my brothers calling me names and beating on me like brothers do. The father, who was very loud and controlling. Although my dad wasn't all negative, he taught me a lot about business, a lot of great aspects about life. Like one of them was always, if you had brains for dynamite, you wouldn't have enough to blow your head off your shoulders. It was one of the funny terms he would always say. But he also taught me a lot of good stuff. Like, Ryan, you're short, you might as well accept it. So he goes, your new nickname is going to be Shorty. So when I came out here and started getting a job, I'm like, I'm short, you know, I'm angry, you know. And so they'd say, well, what's your name? Say, I'm Shorty. I don't know how I got the name. It just stuck with me somehow. So it really helped open me up and try to calm down that resentment, because there really was nothing I could do about it. I had to pretty much surrender to it. I couldn't change it. So I go on in life, and I find the one, the her, as you would say. She seemed perfect. All she did was party, and that's all we did was party together. Party, party, party. I didn't know her at a sober state because all we did was party. But she was the one. And I was always by her side, and I knew I could fix her. I could fix her because she needed some fixing, but I could do it. I chased her and partied with her for over 3 years until I finally, on one drunken night, finally got my reward. So next thing, we moved in together, she got pregnant, we got engaged, and we had a daughter all within 9 months. You think I should be speaking at an AA sponsorship for myself, hey? All that. Whew. And I also like to think I knocked her up so she couldn't get away next time. So just, you know, a little harder to run with the big bun in the oven, eh? Well, after our daughter was 6 months old, I was married to this very angry woman who I couldn't control. She was angry, and after about 6 months, the daughter was done breastfeeding, and she went back to drinking. Many a nights, coming home, 4 a.m, angry, fist fighting, throwing stuff, and I just tried to keep it quiet and keep it, don't wake up our daughter. And life started to spiral out of control as it got worse, and it got worse, and I had no control on my life. Before I know it, we are $80,000 in consumer debt, living this life I thought I was supposed to live, but no one had really taught me the tools, or the incorrect tools, I should say. I was married to a very angry woman, and life was out of control that I had no grasp on. I couldn't control it at all. I was so stressed that my Tourette's went out of control. I ended up taking more medication. If anyone knows narcotics, they make you to a zombie. I was pretty much a zombie. I gained 50 pounds. I couldn't do nothing. Every day was gray and bleak and dull. So after after all the fighting and stuff and life being out of control and the stress stacking up, and I couldn't work because of the narcotic medication I was taking, really just made me, I couldn't work, I couldn't deal with anything, I was sleeping all the time. And that's like life just spiraled down to that black hole. And I couldn't see that light at the end of the tunnel. So one night we were bathing our daughter Lily, and of course we got into a fight over anything, how to shampoo her hair or something, you know. And I lost it. I walked out of the house, and that night it was pouring down rain. There was a lightning and thunderstorm, and it was loud, torrential downpour. And I walked out of the house with just my shoes on. Okay, I guess underwear, pants, and shirt too. I'm not that kind of person. I walked down to the river, and I went to this dock that I knew was there, and I stood on the corner of that dock. I got right to the corner. It was pouring down rain, lightning storm, and as I looked out onto that water in the lightning storm, And I said, Ryan, you could end it all here. Just one step and it could be all done from this point. And it was at that point that I shook my fist at him, at my higher power, at God, and said, damn it, I did everything. I was the nicest guy to everyone. All I was a nice guy, and everyone was so mean to me. I've done everything I could for everyone else, but no one wanted to give it back to me. Why me? Why? I'm short. I have Tourette's. And damn it, I'm angry. I smite you. Why me, you know? And I told him right then and there, I should just take a, it could have been like 6 inches step into that water, and it could all been done. That's all I had to do. But then at that turning point, the very most focal point of my life, it turned around. Right behind me, a bolt of lightning hit. Where behind me, it scared me. And oh, I just fell in the water. Well, I almost fell. I don't want to go in the water. It was right then there that my higher power said, hey, you want to go in the water? Here, huh? I came to believe my higher power wanted to push me in the river. You know? Just saying. But it made me realize that turning point in my life that I did not want to end it, that I had something to live for in my beautiful daughter, Lily. I had to live for. I had to make a difference in her life. Although my life wasn't perfect, I could be the positive thing in her life. From that point, I stepped back off the edge of the dock. I stepped onto the land, and I started walking and talking, and I turned my attitude around. And like, you have so much to live for, so much positive greatness. So from that point on, ended up getting into counseling. And that's where life started going the right track. And I learned that I did have a voice. And my voice was powerful. From all my life being told to sit down and shut up, you have nothing good to say. You're just a hyperactive little kid. To this learning that I have a voice. And I stepped into the family company, and I was a force to be reckoned with. Everything I said I would do, I did. I got my father to, for once, have respect for me. And I don't know if any of you have had this father that doesn't give you any positive affirmation. And then, 27 years later, say, I'm so proud of you, Dad. Thanks, Dad. It's pretty hard to fight back tears. It's when you wait so long for it, so bottled up, you can't wait to get it, and you finally get it. Then he gets distracted, things change, and I'm not good enough anymore. But I got that out of him for once. I was happy. I got it. I was proud of myself. I knew what I was worth. And then one thing that really helped was my counselor said, if you're writing an autobiography of yourself, who is Ryan? Who is Ryan? Write down your strengths, your weaknesses. And I said, Ryan is good at helping others. Ryan will do whatever anyone else wants. I didn't know who Ryan was. I knew what everyone else wanted Ryan to be. But I did know who Ryan was. And through one night, I just took a walk, and I ended up figuring out who Ryan was. And Ryan is short and has Tourette's, although it's fizzled down quite badly right now. You don't see it. But No, just kidding. But I ended up starting to embrace those strengths, embrace those weaknesses. Yeah, I'm short, but I got a lot of good things. I'm a good guy. I'm a nice guy. I'm a great guy. I'm a good friend. I'll do whatever you need me to. But I'm also like, I can't reach the highest things on the top shelf, you know, start to embrace that. And so I started learning that there are good things and bad things, but I just embrace them all. Love them for who I am. So life went better. And through the counseling got me into Al-Anon. She said, you know, I think you have some issues, you know, with resolving your mother. As I looked at the glass of wine my wife had in front of her, and I remember looking at that glass of wine being so angry, going, you're the reason this happened. I'm so angry. And I remember telling that to my counselor, and the counselor saying, what do you see when you see that? Oh my God, I see my mom's beer can. And so it tied me back that, wow, this is deeper. This is not fixed for me. I need help. I came to this program, and through this program, life has turned around, even so much fuller and doing so great. Through being here, now as of, I think now my wife is 7 months sober. She's found sobriety. We now have 2 children. We're moving further in our life, and I am so full of love for that beautiful woman that is my wife. I am so full of love, and I look at her, I'm so happy that I didn't turn it around. because just 7 months ago, I was ready to leave. I was done. I'm not dragging this on anymore. I've tried, and if she can't do it, whatever. You know, it's now up to me. And so I was ready to leave, but she, through me leaving, found the program. And our life is so happy and full of love today, and I'm full of love for myself, knowing what I've gone through and using that as tools that I know I can cope through anything. I can get through everything. And I always have a quote that I kind of wrote in life, and my quote is, remember, whenever it's cloudy up above, always remember it's sunny above the clouds. Whenever life is tough and feels like crap, you're going to get through it. For, you know, we don't write this book of life. We are just the characters in the book. And you turn it one page at a time. You can't grab 30 pages and flip it over and be at the end of the story because it'll be blank. You need to write, those pages get written one day at a time. So, with that being said, are we doing for time? Done? Okay. I'll just leave you with one joke. If someone comes into a room angry and yelling, and you try to do anything to help, you might be an adult child. Yeah. We could go on with the adult child jokes, but I guess I'm over time, so I'm going to go. And thank you all for having me, and I love you. And let's enjoy the rest of the journey. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ryan. Yeah, I'm the kind of guy who likes to read ahead, so I don't know if that works for me. Next up, we will call Anne to come. I should have told Ryan. I'm not. I forgot about all of this. I'll come and sit up front so I can give you a time that I'm supposed to give, but I probably won't. So anyways, go ahead, Anne.
Hi, my name is Anne, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Ryan. That was awesome. I really appreciate what I've heard both last night and this morning so far. And thanks, Marty, for asking me to share. Outside my comfort zone for sure, and that's always a good thing. So came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. That's what's taken me quite a while to learn, to believe, and to actually practice, because for me it's all about me practicing the belief that I have in belief in my higher power. I stopped, when I came to AA, I had not been drinking for 11 years. And I did that through the Sweat Lodge ceremony, First Nations Red Road, as I call it. And it was a powerful experience for me and continues to be a part of my life today. However, in 2006, actually October 28th, 2006, I went to my first AA meeting. A friend 12-stepped me. He saw something that I didn't see, which is probably the story of my life, not seeing the impact that I was having on my world. I had no idea how I was. I thought everything was fine. I thought I'd stop drinking. Everything is fine. You know, my life, I was working, I had in a relationship, a long-term relationship, and I did have a relationship with my birth family, and that was okay, that was good. However, I did not, as I said, see the impact of who I was and what I was doing. I didn't realize how controlling I was still was in my life, wanting to be in my life, wanting everything to be as I thought it needed to be, my way. And so coming into AA, actually, I started to have my eyes opened as to who I was, what I was, how I was. Because it wasn't really it was what I was, how I acted. And And even though when I came in, it took me quite a while, I didn't, as other people have said last night, I didn't follow all of the suggestions. I did some of the suggestions. And after, I don't know, a few years in AA, I was at a meeting in Mexico, and I realized that what the heck was I doing? I was not really doing the program. I was doing some of the things, but I wasn't doing everything. And I saw that if I had to get honest, I had to really get honest with myself. And so I came back from that, and I felt like my whole world had just gone, been totally shifted, even though nothing had changed in an external sense. It was all just internally, I was just altered. And so I got into a book study, and that really, really helped. That was the really big turning point for me at that point. And I had done another book study. I had done some of the steps, not all of the steps. But this time, I actually came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I had always thought I believed in a higher power. I had believed in a higher power. And I'd had an experience at a young age of profound love. I'd been in an accident, a motorcycle accident, and I came to on the ground and said, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. And everything I'd been doing up to that point was kill myself. And so even that, though, that was forgotten. You know, if you don't practice these things, if I don't practice this stuff, I forget. I don't live it. If I'm not living it, what am I doing? It's just not part of me. And so when I was in this book study, I saw that this was possible. It was possible for me to become willing. All the book says is that I have to become willing. And if I start from willingness, then I can move on. But I had to be willing. I had to be willing to see that I was arrogant. I had to be willing to see that I was the problem. Not my world being the problem, that I was the problem. And it was suggested to me that I read page 62 and 63 in the Big Book, which is about selfishness, self-centeredness. And it took me days and days, months of reading those paragraphs and substituting we for I had to make it. And one day I was at work, and I heard myself whining to my boss about a coworker, like just whine. But I finally heard it. I heard myself saying those words, and I thought, oh my God, that is the selfishness, self-centeredness. That is it. And I just said, okay, I get it. I finally got it. And so from that point, seeing the depth of my arrogance, I could then be willing to let that go, to change that. And in that, I came to believe that it was possible. Because it's all about practicing it. If I don't do it on a daily basis, I can say I believe something, but it's my actions that actually say what the facts are in my life. And so that's one of the things I have to do every day is, thy will be done, not mine. And those were words I would say I still say to myself, maybe a gazillion times a day, thy will be done, not mine. If I get upset about something, it's me. I need to change something. And by believing that that's possible, I found in saying those words that it changed. Things began to change. Things that would just really flip me out, get me like, you know, like wanting to do everything outside of me except for in here. By doing those, by saying, thy will be done, not mine, those things changed. And got the message. And so that, I like I said, it's still part of my life today. And some of the things that one of the things that really was powerful for me was that I realized that I could be forgiven. And I didn't get that until I was doing my step nines, that it was possible, that my higher power made it possible for me to be forgiven. And it also, my higher power made it possible for me to see in doing the steps that the decisions I made about myself early on, way, way, way before I started doing drinking and drugging, that those decisions were what made my life. And it wasn't me being a bad person, it was a decision I made about myself. And that I could forgive myself for that, because that was me just being an innocent child saying, thinking I was bad. And out of that feeling of being, I'm bad, I'm worthless, I then did all these things. And so I know that it is day by day, moment by moment, that this is, as everyone has said, this is the moment I have to live. And in this moment, I turn my life over. And in turning that over in this moment, then that will build the moments that are to come. And there's no way to turn ahead the pages. It's all speculation. But it is in my living in this moment and my believing and trusting in my higher power to do what's right in front of me that I create the world that my higher power has given me to live. So thanks for letting me share.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Anne. Our last 10-minute speaker this morning is my friend Wes. If you will come on up. He's not vertically challenged. Well, he is in another way, maybe, but you know.
Hi, everybody. My name is Wes.
Hi, Wes. Oh, shit. Jam. Jam, cream, milk. Oh, shit. Wrong list. So there's a joke about pain and insanity, and it's the fight between men and women that have said that, you know, each gender experiences pain stronger than the other. And women have said, you know, having a baby is the most painful thing you will ever experience. But men have said, no, it's not. A kick in the nuts is more painful. Now, if you think that through, after about a year, a woman will say, you know, I wouldn't mind another baby. I'm stealing this one. I told him I stole it because he said it once. It's from Richard. He says, you know, anyone can be an alcoholic. You got to know somebody to be here. So, I know some people. And the person I know is my brother Doug. And I know another guy, and his name is Wes. And I'm just going to try and... I'm really interested to see how this is going to work, because I've never done this. I want to see if both these things can hit the center point of what we're talking about, coming to believe. I want to talk about my brother Doug for a moment. I'm the youngest of four brothers, so he's like 18 years older than me. And I never really got to meet him until I was well into my 20s. But he taught me how to ride a bike, and he wouldn't let me give up. I wanted to give up. He just kept getting me back on that bike, and I finally learned how to ride a bike. And I've never told him how grateful I am for that. And he was funny. God, he was funny. And everybody liked his humor, and they liked him. And as a kid, I put those two things together, like and funny. You know, I met him really started to meet him in 1972. I was just entering the workforce, went up to Edmonton, took a bus all night to get up there, and showed up at his place at 5 in the morning, and he was so glad to see me. He said, "Wes, it's so good to see you. Let's have a drink." And I thought, well, no, geez, I don't want to drink. You know, I mean, like I was experimenting and drinking, but 5 o'clock in the morning was not a time to be drinking. But to him it was. And that was a shock. That was a shock to see him in, because the only time I ever saw him was when he came out to the farm, when he, you know, just at events. And people always wanted to hang around Doug. So I lived with him for about a year, 6 months, whatever it was for that job. And I had to get used to his drinking. I didn't like his drinking. His drinking made me feel really uncomfortable. I never told him that. Just remember, anything that I say about this time in my life, I never told anybody about. And I learned really early that when I got up in the morning and came into the kitchen, I didn't even have to look at him, I just had to look at the bottle. And I knew what kind of a day I was going to have. I just knew. I knew if I could be happy, or if I was going to be a little weird, or if I was going to be angry. And what do you need me to do today, Doug? Well, we're driving around the city. You're driving. Well, I had other plans. Well, those plans changed. Did not like that. Did not like the fact that I could not tell and would not tell. I would not tell someone about what's happening in my life. So then I've decided, well, if you can't beat them, join them. So I may as well join them. And I didn't know I had that little worm in my head that said, more. One is good, more is better. And that's the route I took. I went for more. The more I got, the more I liked, the more and more and more and more, more. And it started playing. You know, I lost a marriage, lost a couple of, no, yeah, no, what? Yeah, two driver's licenses. Well, you know, is it one, do you lose it once, but it's, never mind. There's a meeting I go down to, go to in Bozeman, Montana, and it's for double winners, and it's for Al-Anon, you know, pretty much AA and Al-Anon. But they read out, they say that, you know, if you're from another 12-step program, please, you know, try and do what we're doing here, because it's one thing to be an alcoholic, but it's different to be affected by an alcoholic. And so please try and apply the Al-Anon ideas to if you're being affected by someone else's drinking. And I really appreciate that. And then I think about my last drunk, where I was standing at the door of a locked door, asking the person on the other side of the door, "What's your problem?" While I'm standing in a t-shirt and bare naked from the bottom down. And then when I woke up the next morning in bed by myself, "Is Emmett here?" I came downstairs and I had to go outside and bury my shit, because I shit myself. So we don't get here pretty. We get here pretty bruised and beat up. And I remember having a out-of-body experience, watching myself. I can still see myself right now, standing at that door, pounding on that door, asking that person, "What is your problem?" Couldn't get it, did not get it. So I thought, well, I need to quit. I need to quit this behavior. So I did. I quit drinking. And if anyone's sitting here thinking, "There's the answer," that's not the answer. That just makes it even worse. And it got worse. It got absolutely worse until I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to one meeting. You folks were very friendly, thank you. Went to another meeting. It's funny how we get, you know? We're so sick But once we've got a little bit of recovery, just a little, now we're starting to get a little bored. Now it's like, oh, geez, here's the newcomer, and would you like to speak on step one, Tom? Okay. So the guy that was hauling me around, I'd heard his story, and they asked him to speak. And I thought, oh, God, here we go. I know he's a barber, and he went, Jesus. Can you guys not make up something different just to make it a little more fun? And I think, spiritually, mentally, and physically, because I was a little too scared to get up and just walk out, but I was leaving. You guys had nothing for me. I was bored. This is nothing. I don't care if it's the last house on the block. Where can I go now? I didn't really want to go back to that guy pounding on that door. So I was in this real gray area. I couldn't see the rest of my life with, and I couldn't see the rest of my life without. And at that moment, and I don't know how that fits for everyone else here, but in that moment, in my mind's eye, I said, if I could only see what you're talking about, and I don't even know what I said after that. And by the time I had said that little prayer in my brain, Gordon had stopped talking. The chairman looked at me and said, would you like to share? And in that instant, this is where I came to believe. In that instant, I went, Wes, you're an alcoholic. Oh, jeez. And then all of a sudden, I realized, geez, maybe my brother has a problem with alcohol. And all of a sudden, those two vortexes just came to one moment in time. I said, yeah, I'm Wes, I'm an alcoholic. And Gordon smiled, because up until that point, I hadn't said nothing. I was just the newcomer, getting a few pats on the back, but I got it. I absolutely got it. It is cellular. There's not one person in this room that can talk me out of this. I get this. In the big book, after they read chapter 5, how it works, the ABCs, there's two words that they say before you carry on. It says, being convinced. And that's steps 1 and 2. You know what? I am here to reconcile with Wes. This is like, I really enjoyed what Ann said. This is like a continuous, daily, one day at a time, on and on, just wind it back up, wind it back up. Thank you. So two old guys are in a grocery store. And they come around the corner and they bang their carts together. And the one guy says, oh, geez, I'm sorry. He says, no, it's fine. I was just a little distracted. I'm looking for my wife. And the guy said, well, what does your wife look like? He says, well, she's about 6 feet tall, long blonde hair, very well endowed, beautiful shape, short hot pants on. He says, oh, really? And the guy says to him, well, what does your wife look like? He said, never mind, let's go look for yours. Thank you.